From the Land to Grand Hyatt of our city in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of March 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson at TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com. We'll look in depth at the volatility taking place in the Middle East and the fundamentals of the marketplace, meaning supply and demand. Then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast. Many interesting things happening there. We'll talk about last night's storms with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, and he'll take up a very long recurring cycle from last winter, early last winter, about 45 days, and some issues it might create over time in the United States. And we'll do all of that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at WILLAG.org. You can also search us out in your favorite podcast applications, places like Apple, Spotify, YouTube, Alexa, the Google in your house. Just ask or type in the Closing Market Report, and it should play or pop up.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day settled at $4.60 and a quarter, 8 cents higher. July at $4.72, up 8 3/4. And December corn today, $4.89 on the settlement price, up 9 1/4 cents. May beans, $12.14, 12 1/4 higher. July, $12.27 and a quarter, up 12 1/4. And November beans, $11.63 and a quarter, the new crop, up 9 3/4 of a cent. Bean meal futures, 90 cents higher, at $3.15.40. The bean oil, $67.16, up $1.50. Wheat futures, soft red July at $6.05 3/4, up 2 1/2 cents. The hard red July, $6.27 1/4, 4 1/4 cents higher. Live cattle futures down $2.22 1/2 cents. Feeder cattle, $6.37 1/2 lower, and lean hogs at $95.20 per 100 pounds, 87 1/2 cents lower on the day. Crude oil, $87.66 a barrel, up $4.21. The wholesale price of gasoline, 14 3/10 of a cent higher, at $2.75 1/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, off 353 points at this hour, at 47,392 for the day. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Greg Johnson from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com, now joins us to talk a very volatile marketplace with us. Hey, Greg, thanks much. Last week at the All Day Ag Outlook, and I'm pretty certain this was the case because it's what Bloomberg reported from the All Day Ag Outlook, that you all, both for corn and soybeans, said lots of volatility, but the fundamentals still suggest there's just a lot of supply. Can you put those two things into context for me?
Yeah, the supply side of that equation is exactly correct. We do have a big supply of beans. Brazil is probably getting close to half harvested, if not a little bit more by now. And so they've made it through in very good shape. It's going to be a record crop. Maybe not quite as big as what we thought a month ago, but the USDA still says 180 million metric tons for Brazil. They lowered the Argentine crop by 500,000 metric tons, but even if they lower the Brazil crop by 1 million, that's still going to be a record crop out of South America. We're going to plant more beans up here in the U.S. It's just a question of how many more acres. These higher input costs due to the Middle East conflict might increase corn acres, increase bean acres by another 1 million, 1.5 million, may reduce corn acres by 1 million, 1.5 million. We'll have to see how that plays out. But the fundamentals would say we're going to have an abundant supply of soybeans. So the only question is, does China come in and alleviate some of that excess supply with some additional demand? Maybe we'll get an answer to that when President Trump and President Xi meet in early April. Maybe we won't. So that's the uncertainty, but we definitely do have a bigger supply of soybeans. And so the uncertainty is on the demand side of the equation. And that's why I think we are seeing some pretty wild swings in both corn and beans this past week or so.
Yeah, so Friday, a pretty good up move, follow through in the overnight trade, which is fairly typical. I mean, just unbelievable follow through in the overnight trade into Sunday morning, or into Sunday, Monday morning, and then step back, what did farmers do in the draw area about making old and new crop sales in the face of that and then with the up move today?
Well, we've been encouraging farmers to put offers in to get their old crop corn sold at $4.50. You know, we had $4.50 last summer, and that's the last time that we've been able to pay $4.50 for corn. It was as low as $3.75 this fall, this past fall, before now we're rallying up into that $4.50 area. And so farmers that had offers in got that booked, and they were happy about that. Then the market sold off a little bit, down to about $4.35, but now we're back up to that $4.50 level again. So farmers are selling old crop corn and beans. They don't have as many old crop beans to sell because I think they were probably 80-85% sold on old crop beans going into this rally. So there's not as many beans for sale at this point, but corn, I think farmers were still holding on to every bit of a third of their old crop corn. And so now this rally has allowed them to lighten up and get some of those old crop corn bushels moved at some pretty good prices.
Is basis reacting at all in the face of the volatility?
We've seen some of the processors drop their bids by 2-3 cents, but not nearly as much as what you might think for this kind of rally. I think farmers have been disciplined sellers. They're not overwhelming the market. They're letting a little bit loose, but not that much that we're seeing basis levels drop. Here in Champaign, we have not dropped our basis a bit. Basis is still the exact same as it was. Basis remains firm. So usually when the futures market rallies, the basis widens out a little bit, but that's not the case this time around, and that's good for the producers.
All right. What do you see going forward, or can you give us an idea of what things might look like?
I think it boils down to the Middle East situation. If we think that situation will calm down and tankers can start going through the Strait of Hormuz again, oil prices will drop and we could see corn and bean prices drop. On the other hand, if that conflict lasts for weeks, months, who knows how long, I think there will still oil prices will remain relatively high, and that will allow corn and bean prices to remain relatively high. So it's that simple, but it's also that difficult to figure out, because I'm not sure if anybody knows when exactly the tensions will ease over there.
Yeah, it's about the logistics and the uncertainty both. So logistics, just Strait of Hormuz, being able to move through that area, tankers and all kinds of freight, and then the uncertainty about when the war might end.
Exactly. And you have to remember, keep in mind, there is a limit as to how high prices can go. I mean, at $120 a barrel oil, which is where we got to over the weekend, people started figuring out, hey, you know, we don't have to go through the Strait of Hormuz. Maybe we can, you know, go around. It's a lot longer and it costs more money. But for a certain price, you can, you know, figure out a way to get crude oil, fertilizer inputs from point A to point B. It's going to cost more, but there is a price level at which people will figure that out. So I don't want to just say as long as the war goes on, prices are going to go higher. There is a limit as to how high prices can go, but I'm not sure if we've been there yet or not. But just keep that in mind, I guess, for, you know, there, you know, we want to lock in profits, and you know, there's so much uncertainty that, you know, I think farmers just have to be a little bit disciplined, and you're not going to hit the high of the market. You just have to be happy with the price that you're getting, I think.
How much change do you think in acreage there could be? I know you talked about a million, but in the I states, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Minnesota as well, Nebraska. So we get kind of the top five, although Indiana is not there all the time. But how much of an acreage shift, if any, do you see in those, or do producers stick with their rotations in that area?
If the inputs are available, I don't think you'll see much shift at all in the I states. I think where you'll see the shift is in the Dakotas, the Kansases, the Kentuckys, the Ohios, places that can't grow 240 bushel corn. I think that's where you'll see an acre shift back to soybeans. So I've kind of been using going from 99 million acres this past year down to 95. Now I would say it's probably 94. Because for people that did not get their inputs locked in, they're going to have to pay higher input costs. And, you know, that they may decide, hey, I can't afford to pay those higher input costs for corn, so I'm just going to plant a few more beans. So that probably adds another million acres of beans and a million less acres of corn. So it may be as low as 94 million acres when it's all said and done on corn.
We'll have to check with USDA NAS to see if they can capture that from the surveys that are being returned from farmers and when those surveys actually get in, so that we can have a better idea of what that March 31 survey might look like for the prospective plantings report. Anything else before I let you go?
No, I think it's basically all eyes are on the Middle East, and that on days when it looks like it's going to continue, when the Iranians say they're going to dig in and hang out for or hold out for an extended period of time, the crude oil market goes higher, and that allows corn and beans to go higher. On other days when President Trump says it's just about over with and we're coming to a close, then prices go lower, and I don't know that anybody knows for sure. So lots of volatility in this market for the time being.
Thank you much. We appreciate it, Greg.
Hey, thank you, Todd.
That's Greg Johnson. He is with TGM. That's TotalGrainMarketing.com, based in the elevator right here in Champaign County. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. If you visit our website, you'll still find information about crop insurance decisions. Those need to be made very shortly. Also, you'll find content from the Ag Economist, the Crop Scientist, and the Animal Scientist right here on the U of I campus. It's all at willag.org. That's willag.org. Just one quick news item for the day. U.S. farmers are bracing for a system shock due to disruptions in shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall urged the Trump administration to intervene in a letter with several recommendations. The letter noted that 49% of global urea exports and about 30% of global ammonia exports come from the Persian Gulf. Recommendations include utilizing the U.S. Navy for the safe transit of fertilizer shipments and providing financial assistance to vessels carrying fertilizer cargo. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Kind of a rough night in parts of the Midwest last night. Drew, tell me about that storm track to begin with, and then we can put that in context of the volatility of just the spring season.
Yeah, you know, we really have kind of kicked into spring fairly quickly here, and I don't think the atmosphere is fully ready for that because we keep getting shots of cold air coming around. And this round of severe weather last night started actually down in central Texas, worked its way up through central Oklahoma, and then into eastern Kansas, and then from eastern Kansas through northwest Missouri up into parts of the southern Great Lakes region is where a lot of the action was. There was also some high wind reports that occurred in southern Illinois as well. But most of that larger area I described is where the wind and the hail was great. And then we had several tornadoes noted in Texas and some from Illinois up into parts of Indiana. So a wild night, and I'm afraid it's just the beginning. We're going to continue to see some wild weather off and on as we go throughout the spring season, just simply because we do have quite a bit of contrast in air mass characteristics coming up as we go forward through these next few weeks.
If I'm not mistaken, that is a really large geographic area, and it must have just moved super fast. How unusual is it?
Well, it's probably a little unusual for early March. I mean, we usually get something like this maybe in late April or early May once in a while. But yeah, it was a very broad area of pretty wild weather, and a definite byproduct of so much warm, moist air coming northward. And, you know, we've been so warm for this time of the year that the atmosphere really didn't have a chance to cool down before the cold air mass came around, and that really fired off these storms. And I think we'll see something like that occurring periodically as we go forward through the season, although I think this particular round of stormy weather is probably going to run its course as we finish out the day today and maybe a little bit tomorrow in the eastern part of the country. But for the most part, we are probably at the end of this outbreak, but we will see something else occur just another week or so away in parts of the eastern Midwest, and then later in the month, again, maybe more broad-based.
So that was part of the volatility I wanted to discuss, but really it was about the changing temperatures in the air masses over time, because it appears a lot of the Midwest will be very cold at some time in the not-so-distant future.
Yes, you know, we've got a little shot of cold air coming right away behind this severe weather we've had, and folks out in the western Midwest are already experiencing that today. A north wind, and temperatures will be in the 50s and some 40s out there. But this isn't the peak of the cold. There's actually a reinforcing shot of cold air that will come around as we get into early next week, maybe Sunday through about Tuesday, and before that system comes through, we will see a rather aggressive storm center evolve across the northern parts of the Midwest, and we'll probably have, unfortunately, some blizzard or near blizzard conditions occurring late in the weekend across the region from South Dakota to Michigan, and some lighter snows to the north and south of that area. But we could get pretty wild there, and there might be another band of severe thunderstorms in the eastern Midwest and the southeastern United States. But all of that comes ahead of very cold air, and this is going to be the anniversary. I think it's March 17th is the anniversary date of the big cold surge that we had in late January, early February, when that was when we had the citrus freezes in Florida and a lot of sugarcane on the Gulf of America coast being hurt as well. And then that was, of course, the beginning of that long series of high energy demand days for the Atlantic coastal states. Well, this is about 45 days, and we're looking at this pattern repeating again in the latter part of April or the first part of May. Now, this cold air mass that's coming in for early next week, it's pretty potent, and we will get freezes into the northern delta, the Tennessee River Basin, maybe the interior parts of the southeastern states. We'll nip a lot of wheat. It looks like the majority of the wheat isn't any more advanced than the joint stage in those areas, so I don't think we're going to see any permanent damage. My concern is that if we return this pattern one more time in late April, early May, after we've managed to get some corn in the ground and up across parts of the Midwest, we might run the risk of hurting some of that early crop. We may also have wheat that's much more advanced at that point in time. And if we bring another freeze in, of course, it won't be as far to the south in late April and May as it is next week. But there will be other crops that are, you know, well-developed a little farther to the north. So I'm a little bit nervous about the return of this pattern at that point in time. So maybe the best advice I can hand out right now is, you know, maybe slow it down a little bit with the planting. When we start warming back up again here in another week, we want to be careful not to get too far ahead of our frost freeze dates, no matter how nice and warm it may seem, because I do think we'll see more cold.
Yeah, so persistence is one of those things that I feel like happens more often in the spring months and continues into the spring on occasion. I am wondering whether persistence in a 45-day cycle is happens very often as opposed to persistence in a 3, 5, or 7 day cycle.
Yeah, there's definitely a 10-day cycle that is pretty regular, and we can often see that in the weather pattern. This is a little bit different pattern here. It's kind of independent of that 10-day recycling tendency that we've seen in the past. This 45-day pattern actually started way back in November. I don't really know what the driving force is behind it. I want to say it's connected to the lunar cycle, but I don't know that I can really say that with any great deal, a degree of confidence. But it's there. And in other years, we've had repeating cycles like this. They're not always 45 days. I think I can remember one a couple years ago. It was about a 62-day cycle, but it was significant enough that it repeated right through the summer. And it became a great forecasting tool. And this particular one we're looking at here has potential to do that kind of thing again. So we'll watch and see what happens late April, early May. If it shows up again and still is fairly potent, then we'll look after that into maybe sometime around the 1st of June for another shot of cold.
Harvest season in South America, how are things going there?
The harvest took off really well in the previous 2 weeks. I think this last several days has turned a little bit wetter in some spots, but we've really saw a lot of field progress made aggressively in Brazil. The early soybean crop getting largely harvested. Sabrina crop planting has moved way ahead of the norm, and it looks like that field work is going to continue aggressive in the southern, maybe two-thirds of the production region. But the north will be a little wetter. Mato Grosso into parts of Sao Paulo and southern Minas Gerais, those areas will see regular occurring rainfall over the next 10 days. Will slow the field work down a little bit. But I think most of the important Safrinha crops in Mato Grosso are mostly planted at this point. There's some field work that's still left to be done a little bit in a few spots there and also in Goiás. But I think they're going to get along okay. And having this rain right now is really important because the monsoon will end sometime in early April. And having a saturated soil, it would be ideal for ensuring that they can reproduce under favorable conditions. Now, to the south of this, though, it is dry. And that would include southern part of Mato Grosso, the Sol, Paraná, Paraguay, and parts of Sao Paulo. And those areas are probably not going to see high volumes of rain over these next couple of weeks. They could go into the post-monsoonal period without as much moisture as they should have. And that could raise some issues for Safrinha corn later in April or May.
And one final place I'd like to check in on, because of the volatility that's taking place in the Middle East, how are the wheat-growing regions of the Black Sea doing coming out of the winter months?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, this year has turned out to be far better than I think anybody expected. If you recall back to the last autumn, we had quite a bit of drought, especially from in the Middle East, from Turkey over to Iran. The dryness was very serious. There was a lot of talk about them not getting the crop all planted or it would come up very poorly. But over the course of the winter, we did see a considerable amount of precipitation occurring across that region. The moisture profile right now is just about ideal in Turkey. It's also very good in Iraq. Syria's got a little dryness still in the south, but in the north, it's pretty good. Iran, I think the northeast part of Iran has not done very well with moisture. They've had enough for a little bit of improvement, but the bulk of the western part of Iran has had some pretty good moisture for a good start to their wheat crop. And north of the Black Sea in Ukraine and Russia's southern region, I think everything is in fairly good shape. It was also a little dry there last autumn, but we have much better moisture today. And I think the crops will wake up to a much better environment for some new tillering and some aggressive early spring development.
Thank you for helping to lay out the fundamentals on the ground there and what the supply of wheat might be in that area. I appreciate it, and thanks for joining us this week. We'll talk with you again next Wednesday.
You bet. Take care.
That's Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media, public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.